Esme relayed requests for tools, for materials, for personnel. Several glitches required intervention from above. She sicked Commander Ceviche's office on the stubborn senior chief in the technical schools, who didn't see why an instructor in weapons systems should dismiss a class and go help deal with the mine. He'd argued that the 14th was supposed to have its own bomb disposal squad, but polite requests through appropriate channels soon produced a cheerful woman with one prosthetic hand and her custom EVA suit slung on her back. Esme directed her to the right EVA hatch and went back to work. She would have liked to watch the work on Wraith. She knew only vaguely what a foam bed was and what it was supposed to accomplish. But Patak's construction teams had found more casualties in the forward compartments, most dead and the rest unconscious.
The artificial gravity failed up here, along with the communications lines. Some shrapnel probably sliced them open. It's a wonder any of them are alive. But they're all out now, so you can send over the next load of stuff as soon as they're logged clear of the lanes.
Esme looked at the cluttered screen that now represented everything between Kosciusko and Wraith. A query to the scan supervisor tagged the medical evac pod on her screen. When it was out of the way, she put a priority tag on the shipment Patak had asked for and talked to the sergeant miner in T3 responsible for sending it off.
Wow! Oh, good thing they foamed it.
Esme had been concentrating so hard on keeping up with Patak's requests that Sivir's outburst had made her jump.
The mine?
Yeah. Want a replay?
He transferred the replay to her console. Wraith's hull breach no longer faced Kosciusko. She could just see the edge of it. That meant the mine was out of line of sight. The viewpoint shifted. Now, where she remembered the mine should be, an irregular grayish blob strongly sidelit by Kosciusko's floods.
They took this from a pod relayed on tight beam.
This view closed in until she could see that the blob looked like whipped cream or icing piped into a slumpy cylinder. As she watched, another blob of foam appeared, rising, then slipping sideways to seal off the end of the cylinder.
They foamed all the compartments inboard and foamed a cylinder around it, aiming it away from us, then finally put a lobe over the top. That's when...
Oh!
The blob of the foam bed burst apart and something shot out the top, away from Wraith.
See? All the ejecta went the right way. Good design. Reports are that very little blew in the interior. All they have to do now is get all that foam back out, and we can do that in the big bay.
I don't understand how it works. I thought if you can find an explosion, that only made it worse.
I don't really understand it either. But I had a buddy back in Sector 10 who was in their bomb squad. He said you had a choice. You could try to aim it somewhere and let all that energy escape in a direction that didn't bother you. Or you could put enough padding around it to absorb the force.
But the foam bed blew apart.
Well, maybe it needed to be thicker. But it was thick enough to aim the ejecta in a direction that doesn't bother us. Notice where it's going?
Away from Kos is all I know or care.
Toward the jump point exit. We can always hope some fool blood-horde ship comes roaring in here and gets a mouthful of its own bullet.
Esme watched as Wraith's damaged bow edged into the repair bay. It was easy to forget how large that bay was, empty, but the ship gave a reference for the eye.
Sweeza, quit looking at the view and give me a readout.
Yes, sir.
Esme glanced at her board. Patak's concern was the change in center of gravity as Wraith entered Kosciusko's artificial gravity field. Rapid changes could stress the internal structure of Kosciusko beyond safe limits.
Is Wraith's artificial gravity on in any part of the ship?
No, it's not.
There's a torque force developing in the contralateral midsections, only 5.4 dynes right now, but it's increasing in a linear relationship to the mass of Wraith within Kos's field.
That's expected. Not desirable, but expected. Transfer a plot of that to my screen and to power.
Yes, sir.
Esme locked in the curve, keyed for the transfers, and continued to watch her board. Her gaze kept twitching upward to the view of Wraith's approach, but she yanked it back each time. The strain she'd noticed dipped below the curve.
It's dropped below line.
Good. That means power is compensating. But watch for that bulge ahead of the damage. That's something we can't really model for the field generator.
Centimeter by centimeter, Wraith edged in, and the mooring lines were secured.
Cradles shifting in T-minus 15 minutes.
Esme transferred her final readouts to Major Patak and Power, then withdrew to a monitoring station behind the double red lines. Only a few essential personnel would ride the cradles during shift.
I hate to think what that mine would have done to the cradle mechanisms.
Esme glanced back at the voice. Baron Serrano, his dark brows lowered.
It's taken care of.
Esme wondered what he was doing there. His assignment in scan wasn't needed at the moment.
Lieutenant Bondal sent me down here to see if Major Patak had decided where to put the new RSV units.
She hasn't told me, but I'll check for you. Have you heard anything about Bloodhorde ships coming in?
No, and I'm sure I would have, because... Well, anyway, I would have. But I know that Sting and Justice have jumped out.
Why?
They delivered Wraith, and they're supposed to be patrolling out wherever they were. Maybe they thought they'd spot anyone following Wraith's trail in.
Pack leader Volkrace woke to the bustle of a medical ward. When he turned his head, he saw his pack second, Hoch, staring back at him.
What happened?
Freaking sleepy gas. We got hauled in as casualties. I don't think this is the same ship.
They lay, struggling to make sense of what they were seeing and hearing.
They're on the DSR, right inside.
Or two of us.
Volkrace lifted his head cautiously, since no one seemed to be paying any attention to him. He was wearing a clean, pale blue shift of some crinkled fabric, and all up and down the rows of beds were the rest of his assault team, dressed the same way. Most of them, anyway. He counted only 25 of the original 30, and Tar-Yolt wasn't there, their technical expert, the one who knew most about Familius technology. Nor Kerai, nor Sig. His mind ticked off the missing and consigned them to either of the two possible eternal destinations. The rest were there, all butt naked in hospital gowns, but all awake now, staring at him. Before he had time to worry about how he was going to get his team clothed and out of medical, a heavy-set man with a scowl worthy of a Bloodhorde senior sergeant bustled down the aisle between the beds.
All right, nap time's over. None of you got worse than a dose of trank. Come with me. I'll get you clean clothes and put you to work. We'll need your help to get Wraith repaired.
Our IDs?
I've got them. Already passed on the stats to supply, so you'll have something close to fitting.
Volkrace rolled out of bed, surprised to find that he wasn't at all dizzy. The others followed. He saw arms twitch as the automatic habit of saluting conflicted with awareness of their position. Their guide didn't notice. He was scowling at a list in his hand.
Santini?
Volkrace scrabbled through his memory and finally remembered that the name tag on the uniform he'd stolen had been something like that.
Yes, sir.
Wake up, Santini. Says here you were a specialist in ventilation.
Volkrace wondered if that was ventilation as in airflow, or ventilation as in perforating an enemy with a sharp object.
Sir.
That's good. I'll send you over to support systems as soon as we got your gear. Oh, and Kamaho?
Volkrace prayed to the heartrender that someone would have the sense to say something.
Kamaho!
yes, sir?
Oh, shit. I guess you're all still dazed. They told me to give you another hour, but we need help now. Kamaho, report to Major Patak in H&A. Now, let's see. Braddington!
The others caught on quicker now, and Volkrace wondered if the others remembered the names on the uniforms they'd stripped from dead men, or if they were just answering blind. It probably didn't matter. Supposedly, the Familius ships had a fancy way of figuring out who was really one of their own, but so far he hadn't seen any sign of it. Eventually, all of them had answered to their new names. Names which felt uncomfortable, even held so lightly. Names with no family chant behind them. For a moment, Volkrace wondered if the strangers' families had chants of their own. But this was not the right kind of thought for the belly of an enemy ship. He pushed it away, and it fell off his mind like a landsman off the deck of a dragon ship in rough seas. Instead, he thought of the battle to come. The hot blood of enemies that would soak his clothes. Not cold and clammy this time, but properly steaming. He had not minded stripping the dead and putting on their blood-soaked uniforms, not after the rituals of the blooding, but it had been distasteful to feel it already cold. His pack followed him through the enemy ship, He could feel their amusement, even as his own bubbled just beneath the surface. The enemy. More like prey than enemy. Like sheep leading a wolf into the fold in the mistaken notion that it was a sheepdog. Even as Vokres accepted a folded pile of clothes, he was sure that his pack could have taken the ship bare naked with only their blood hunger. Instead, he dressed quickly, carefully, not meeting anyone's eyes. He had worn Familia's clothing before, in his years as a spy. The soft cloth, the angled fastenings, felt almost as familiar as his own. The lack of weapons didn't. He missed the familiar pressure of Needler and Stunner, Knocknab and Gutstab. Familia's troops carried weapons only into battle, and DSR's didn't fight. The helpful enemy had leapfrogged them over the first two phases of the plan, handing them the chance to disperse throughout the ship. With any luck at all, and the gods definitely seemed to be loading luck upon them, no one from Wraith would notice that the men wearing the uniforms of shipmates were not shipmates at all. Vokres followed the route displayed on the palm-sized mapcom, sure that he could deal with whatever he found when he arrived.
No, I'm not going to send anyone from Wraith back over there. Not after they've been knocked out for a week or so with sleepy gas. Their cogs won't be meshing for another two shifts. We don't want accidents.
Vokres heard the end of that and wondered whether feigning mental illness would do anything useful. Probably not. They might send him back to the medical area, or he could end up in bed with no pants on. Better to seem dutiful but slightly confused. The confusion, at least, was honest enough. Familia's technology impressed him as it had before. So much of it, and it worked so well. No familiar stench of sweat and gut breath. Clean air emerged from one grill and vanished into another. The lights never flickered. The artificial gravity felt as solid as a planet. The little communications device and the data wand he'd been given were smaller and worked better than their analogs on the Bloodhorde ship. This was what they had come for, after all. The technology they had not been able to buy or steal or, last and least efficient ploy, invent. Bigger ships, better ships, ships that could take on Familius and compassionate hand cruisers and win. The technicians to keep the technology working. Vokres eyed the others around him. They didn't look like much, but he had somewhat overcome the prejudice of his upbringing. He knew that smart minds could hide in bodies of all shapes, but hardly one in 50 looked like any kind of warrior. Meanwhile, his pack was dispersed throughout the DSR very handily. Probably several supervisors would decide, as his had, to assign them simple duties. Eventually, a meal would come, and they'd have access to eating utensils, so easily converted to effective hand weapons. An hour, two. Vokres worked on, willing enough to sort parts, package them in trays, stack them on automatic carriers. There was no hurry. They had gained time by being put to sleep and admitted as casualties, an irony he hoped to be able to share at the victory feast with his commander. Once, he caught a glimpse of another pack member, carrying something he didn't recognize. For an instant, their gazes crossed. Then the other man looked away. Yes, huge as this ship might be, they would locate one another, and their plan would work. And the longer they had to explore it, to learn its capabilities, the easier to slit its guts open when the time came.